And that's the kicky music that means it's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. Now, this is a very special week for us. Every now and then, I feel the need to cleanse the room of boys and fill the room with lovely women. So, we're having a very special episode. Tanya Ballard Brown, what do you do at NPR?
I am a digital news editor for NPR.org.
And so what does that mean you do? Well, what does that mean? And I don't mean that you don't do anything. I just mean,
what are you doing with your time?
People out there in the world don't necessarily know what that means.
What that requires me to do is to work with the National Desk, All Things Considered, and Morning Edition to help come up with complimentary content on the web for their show.
Complimentary content.
I love
it. As well as original web-only content.
Wonderful.
That has my name on it.
Of course it does. Parul Sehgal, what do you do at NPR?
I'm the books editor at NPR.
And what do you do in your job?
Much like Tanya, I work on sort of providing web compliments to on-air segments and bring in web-only content like reviews and essays.
You do a little writing now and then.
I do a little writing.
Outstanding. Wonderful. And, you know, it's been a while since we had Barry Hardiman on the show, but Barry Hardiman has also made her way into the studio. Barry Hardiman,
yeah.
what do you now do at NPR these days?
I am an erstwhile editor at Talk of the Nation, but I am now the... not sure that I used erstwhile correctly, but I am now editor at Weekend Edition. Yeah. I am now a weekend gal, which means that I'm here on my Saturday, and I look like I just got off a beach, circa 2007, really, but
yeah.
I was kind of doing like a peasant thing.
Outstanding. All right. It is actually a coincidence, believe it or not, that we are taping this episode right after the premiere of the new HBO series called Girls. Now, we were actually sort of nervous that it was going to seem like we brought a bunch of women into the studio and then said, let's find women things for you to talk about.
And ribbons were suggested.
That's true.
Thank you.
Here, Brady.
That's Glenn Weldon.
Glenn had given us a list of topics. It included ribbons.
Bobbins,
our cycles, chocolate ack.
Peonies, ponies.
Chocolate ack.
I won't tell you the third P thing.
That's true. Swimsuit season. Mm-hmm. But this just happens to be the show that just premiered. And were the boys here, I would have asked them to comment on it probably as well. But we decided that we would watch a little Girls on HBO. If you have not been following the extensive coverage of Girls, it is created, written, and directed by Lena Dunham, who also did Tiny Furniture a couple years ago. She has made a comedy about four young women living in New York and sort of their trials and tribulations. HBO, of course, has been known to have an occasional comedy in the past about four women living in New York, but this one is definitely a little bit different in tone. Barry Hardiman, why don't you kick us off? What did you think?
I have been so polluted by the amount of coverage this thing has gotten and find myself at war within myself also, because I'm glad that it's gotten so much coverage.
Right.
And I think she's fabulous. She was interviewed on NPR a couple weeks ago, which you should check out. She's delightful. She's really smart. People have been quelling so much about this thing that I had the feeling of, that was pretty good at the end.
Yeah.
I didn't have the feeling of, that was amazing.
Yeah.
I think she is one of the most natural people I've ever seen on TV. Mm-hmm. And I guess there's one thing about this is that I realize, you know, again, HBO is the place where we've before seen the four ladies hanging out in New York City. And I think at the time that I watched the four ladies hanging out in New York City, I was probably closer to the age.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute, this is wishful thinking. I may have been closer to the age
closer,
of the girls.
Closer.
I was closer, not close. So it's a different experience to watch something that is closer to the experience that I had in New York as a 25, 26-year-old. I mean, not in all ways, people. But it was than it is the other way. So it definitely made me think about, I don't know. I actually, now that we brought this up, I look forward to having this conversation in 3 or 4 weeks because I don't have a sense of anything other than how natural a TV personality Lena Dunham is.
It's always early. Tanya, how about you?
Okay, I should say that I watched this twice. The last time was just an hour ago, and I can't think of that girl's name that was the lead character.
It's Lena Dunham.
Lena Dunham, right, exactly.
As Hannah,
But that should tell you something.
Yeah.
I don't hate this. Like Barry, I'm reserving judgment, but I think it's mostly because her character irritates me
because I don't have a lot of patience with people who can't get it together
right.
that should.
Right.
So she has about 2 more weeks to get a job and kind of get on the good foot before I'm finished with this show. Or they need to really grow out the other characters and make me interested in them.
Yeah.
And actually her hookup, because he's not her boyfriend. I know she thinks he's her boyfriend, but he's her hookup.
Yeah, he is.
I'd like to know more about him.
Yeah.
And what's his story? Because grandma's giving him $800 to live in there in saw wood or woodwork or whatever he said he was
doing. Authentic.
Woodworking. It's just more honest. Yeah.
That was a genius line.
I thought was interesting was all the drama with her parents. And then they just left her in this whole damn room.
They really
checked out and left.
They did.
No note. $20. I mean, there wasn't even a note with that money. It was.
It was here's $20.
Roll
and
out.
And then here's another $20. Apparently,
yeah. That was an interestingly irredeemable thing for her to do.
Right.
To take the money that was meant for housekeeping. Like that's such a bad thing to do.
Yeah.
Parul, how about you?
I think like Barry and Tanya, I was to some degree underwhelmed, but I think it's more to do because I was so astonished by Lena Dunham's film, Tiny Furniture, and it's something I've seen and seen again. I don't think there's anything like that, really, that we have. Like, even just this picture of young female artistic ambition and this desire to supplant the mother. And this, I think it's so beautiful. And again, like Barry was saying, she's such a gifted performer, and she makes me feel so protective. And I like her immediately, and I want the show to be great. I think that they've established sort of initial conflicts, one person's pregnant, one person wants to get out of this relationship. And yeah, I'm withholding judgment.
Yeah. One of the things that has come up in a lot of the coverage.
Withholding judgment.
Yeah.
So pompous.
Judgment.
We shall decide if the show lives
or
dies.
I'm so sorry. Please judge me.
In our hearts.
That's awful. Awful.
We're all
done. One of the things that's come up in a lot of the conversations about the show that seems to strike a lot of people in a lot of different ways, and Tanya kind of alluded to this, is the idea that these are obviously very privileged young women. And it was very clear that they were being somewhat satirized for being that way. I think when she sits there and says the thing to her parents about, you know, basically that she expects to be able to live off her parents sort of indefinitely, at least at first, I don't think you're supposed to think, like, she's awesome. Her parents should definitely do that. I think it's this picture of you just realize that this is sort of what it is to be, quote unquote, privileged, entitled, all that stuff. It doesn't occur to her that there's anything weird about that. Whereas her parents still have enough of a tenuous hold on this idea of, you know, but you're supposed to have a job. And she feels like, no, I'm supposed to become great. And to me, one of the conflicts I thought was really interesting in it and kind of brought out well was this idea that what her parents are experiencing is kind of this thing where you raise your kid all the way through school with the focus being on, as Parul said,
get the hell out.
Well, no. But no, you don't. You focus them on creative ambition. You focus them on become great. We want you to.
My mother focused on get the hell out.
And therefore you did, right? But what I'm saying is, I think for parents of this character, you know, they put her through great schools and all this stuff, and it's always like, become great, learn to be great. And then all of a sudden, she gets to the end of school, and she's like, well, it's going to take a while longer to become great, and nobody is going to pay me to be working on becoming great. Mm-hmm. And so then her parents are like, why don't you get a job? When she makes the comment,
I can only do one or the other.
Well, she makes the comment to her parents about, I'm so close to this life that you want me to have. And so it's like, in her mind, she's doing what they told her to do, and now they're upset because she can't support herself. I wasn't really sympathetic to her, but at the same time, it is a real thing, I think.
It's also really a thing of the time. You know, again, when I was that age living in New York, you didn't need as much help.
Right.
So there is this thing of, you know, I turned to my husband, I was like, I am so glad that I didn't finish college till a little later than I may have been supposed to. But, you know, I got to float around New York and have odd jobs and support myself when using, like I almost said a needle and thread, but I wasn't sewing. But, you know, in very, very small. And now, you know, this idea that the economy, I'm sorry to bring it up, but
it's
a very good point.
Different. I mean, this idea that you're telling your children, become great, become creative, you know, pursue your ambitions. You kind of can't do that in the same way that maybe my parents did with me because, you know, I could work at the Strand and then still dabble in whatever else I wanted to dabble in.
Yeah. One of the things I appreciated about it that that I do think is a little bit different from Sex and the City. Obviously, Sex and the City always raised these issues of how is she writing like one column?
It's a fantasy.
And somehow yeah.
Right.
That pays all her bills and for these shoes and clothes and this lifestyle.
And that column would maybe pay her bar bill.
Yeah.
Maybe. If you've ever like written
been a serious
not where she went.
Right. Yes. That would maybe cover her bar bill.
Right.
But I did appreciate the fact that this show, for all of its flaws, which I think are real, was able to make a connection between, like Barry is saying, the literal seeking of your fortune in the economic sense mm-hmm. and the seeking of your fortune in this become great sense. Whereas you get a lot of these shows like Sex and the City where it's like, I want to, you know, chase my dreams and do this and write a book and whatever. And it doesn't really become about how are you going to eat? How are you going to pay rent? Mm-hmm. You know?
That's yeah. true. Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing that I'd like to just lay out there, and we can talk about it or not, because I don't feel one way about it or the other, uh-huh. is that they seem to circulate in a world that it's not brown or...
Oh, I'm so ready.
I was going to raise
the
that,
whitest,
too.
But
it's a
you know,
very white
I don't
world.
Know. I haven't spent that much time in New York living. I'm a tourist, so maybe where they live...
Hi, Tanya. I'm Parul Sehgal.
I'm seeing.
I'm a young Indian woman who recently moved from Brooklyn to Washington,
right. I'm saying, you know, they may live in a small enclave.
But,
right.
But, of so, course. According to the 2011 census, yes. which I just happened to know
oh
today.
Oh, my God. I just fell in love with you all over
no,
again.
No, but so New York is no longer a majority white city.
Right.
And Brooklyn specifically, those neighborhoods that they're living in are gentrifying very unevenly. Mm-hmm. And to watch that show, it was like, looking at Vermont, nothing against Vermont. Yeah. Vermont is gorgeous.
Or Maine,
right?
Any northeast
right.
state.
I was like,
sorry.
That's some ruthless whitewashing. Yeah. And then you've got yeah. the crazy black guy who shows up like yeah. right as the credits are rolling.
I
like,
know.
I had sort of conversations about the show throughout the day on Twitter with various, you know, TV writers and with Anna Holmes, who's no relation, Anna Holmes, who has, you know,
Jezebel.
Written for the New York Times yeah. and also is from Jezebel. And, you know, she was sort of making the same point and raising the same thing. And what I was trying to work through was, I don't know how, if you're talking about the four girls being a bunch of white girls, I don't know whether that's unrealistic or not, or whether it's, and then she clarified that she was talking more about the, like you're saying, the whole, this world
the
that
world,
they're moving
yes,
in,
yeah.
which is obviously a different, you know. A different issue. That seems to have struck you too, Ms. Parul Sehgal.
It did. I think that, again, like both of you, I think I've been looking at and watching the sort of public perceptions of the show.
Right.
And it seems to be like a pretty good litmus test for one, how people just feel about young women, mm-hmm. One, and also what people feel the responsibilities of a TV show are,
mm-hmm.
especially in terms of diversity, in terms of race and class. Mm-hmm. On the class
and
issue...
Sex
and
too,
sex,
particularly
absolutely.
With the show. Actually.
Absolutely.
Sorry, don't worry, I'm not going to go crazy.
In terms of the class issues and in terms of her entitlement, I'm fine with that. I think this story, like Tiny Furniture before it, mm-hmm. there's a great long history of great New York stories being about people that are incredibly privileged and especially privileged families, from Salinger's glass family to the Royal Tenenbaums. I'm mm-hmm. fine. And I think Lena Dunham is really circumspect about taking the piss and sort of mm-hmm. satirizing that.
Right.
In terms of race, I think, one, it's very early to tell.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we've all of us who've watched New York being depicted have just felt so burned and just felt so yeah. strange and left out
yeah.
and deliberately excluded.
And that's one of the things that Anna said also when she and I were going back and forth mm-hmm. about this, that she has that same sense that it's just something that's been wearing right. on her over and over a period of years. And actually, there's a woman I know who asked Lena Dunham in a live chat today about this very thing and mm-hmm. sort of said, with New York being a much more diverse place than it looks essentially in this series, do you have plans to do that? Even if it's, you know, secondary characters, like you're talking about the kind of the environment they're in. And basically her response was what I would call the typical well-intentioned but not yet good enough response, which was better than nothing, because she did say, like, I feel bad about the fact that it's not a more realistic portrayal, diversity-wise, of what New York looks like. She referred to it as an accident that it had turned out that way, which I suspect what she means... I cringed at it, too, and I was trying to figure out, like, what that could possibly mean. And I'm wondering whether it means...
It means thoughtlessness.
It's
people are ready to work, SAG.
And that's the thing.
I'll walk through the set.
But she did.
You know, I can serve up tea and say, latte.
But she did say... You know, it is my intention, if we have a second season, to do better than
we did. Oh, so we have to wait until a whole
other
season
if
they get it.
Because then it's so... I mean, this is to talk about Sex and the City and diversity is we can't.
Right.
But you remember when they add the character, Jennifer Hudson, and, you know, at that point, it is such
the Jennifer Hudson character in the movie.
In the movie, it's like, oh, my God, that is, it's so much worse.
Yes.
And if you do that in a second season, it rings of that.
And
which
I don't
is icky.
It's a know that I'm talking about there needs to be
like a black
friend.
Right.
I don't mean that way. I just mean like
people in the
on the street
in the universe.
No, I demand an Indian character. I personally do.
If there's going
like
to be Indians,
nice
then there's got to be a black girl.
Yeah.
More Jews! More Jews!
Yeah, it's really interesting to me because one of the things I think has come out in conversations about this show, as Parul said, it is such a litmus test for people's feelings about representation and different things like that. And what is sad to me is that it's also under this incredible microscope because there are so few shows actually being created, written, directed, run by women. Contrary to popular belief, a lot of these other shows about women, Two Broke Girls and that kind of stuff that's on the networks, a lot of this stuff is actually being created and written, or at least written in an on an ongoing basis by men and not by women, just
that
like Sex and the City was.
A lot about that show. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And Sex and the City, a lot of the creative stuff was men there too. So it's a bummer to me that there's so much weight on this one show.
It's and microscope.
It's almost like I mentioned today, it's almost like Bridesmaids was in the sense that you feel like everybody's saying, okay, well, this is your one chance to make a a lady show work.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work, then we're going to decide people don't want to watch a lady show, as opposed to maybe saying like, well, maybe you need to have a more diverse environment. Maybe you need to be able to appeal to more people by, you know, maybe you missed the mark in whatever set of ways. You know?
Right. Well, no, I agree.
We'll see.
The other thing is, it's not just a show about women. It's also this very particular where she is in her life and where this generation of people, as much as I hate to say generation because it's a thing said about this show to the point where there is a meta joke about it in the show where she sort of talks about being the voice of her generation.
Right.
And then she says, or a voice of a generation. I do think there's a lot to say in this show about at this particular moment in time where people of this approximate age group sort of find themselves. And one of the places where that came up for me was the discussion when she's had this unpaid internship for clearly a couple of years, it sounded
two
like.
Years.
And
for Chris Eigman.
Yeah, she goes to see Chris Eigman, her boss, because she's kind of following the advice that you hear, which is like the know your own value,
go
know your own
it.
Worth,
yeah.
go out and get it for yourself, and go in and insist upon getting yours and all that stuff. And she basically goes in and says, you know I'm good, you think I'm good, you say I'm good, so I need to start getting paid. And he basically says, I have an unlimited pool of free labor. In the form of interns.
Yep.
Literally, she walks in and he says, your value is zero. If your value is what I'm willing to pay you, he literally tells her value is zero.
But,
and
you know, her value is zero because she sat there for 2 years working for free. I mean, she made her value zero.
right. Absolutely. But I can understand.
But that's also a product of this generation as well.
And I can understand
no
how
common sense, because that is no common sense to me.
To work for free.
But it's also
for
two years.
For two years. Post-college.
Yeah. And I agree with
but
that.
But even NPR interns don't do that.
Yeah.
Right?
It's true.
Well, I think part of it is also it's a very specific industry that they're lampooning, and that's how publishing works. And I think, you know, yeah, there are internships. Yes, there are editorial assistantships that people cannot live on. Mm-hmm. So really, it is people like Lena Dunham, daughters of the rich, who would be doing that job to begin with.
Right.
The only people that can afford to do that kind of work.
But then not forever, unless their parents are willing to continue to support them forever. I can understand how someone in her position would feel like, I did the thing that I'm supposed to do. I went and, you know, people say, like, get an internship and that'll help you get a job. And she's like, I can see, as infuriating as I find that character, and I sort of share Tanya's sense that I need her to act a little more, as infuriating as I find her, I also can understand her, how she got that weird sense of like, but I followed the set of rules that I'm supposed to follow.
Right.
And she hasn't accounted for the fact that ultimately you have to figure out where you're going to get money from.
And that and that moment where he says, go work at money, she says, I went to college.
Yeah.
You know, which is, you know,
it's horrible.
You know, it's horrible.
The other thing too that I got from her parents is that her mom seems to be in charge, and her father seems like he may have at one point been a flower child, lost kind of person himself, because he, you know, knew about the drugs and well, maybe we should pay, you know. And so I fault her parents a little bit because I'm too invested in this show now, I see. For her mom, at least, for not, I mean, they told her to be great, but obviously they didn't really give her tools for how to be great. Right. You know, beyond, we'll get an internship.
It's like they gave her a program, but they didn't give her any.
And you know what I wish they hadn't done? This actually, this was something that rankled with me, is that moment where her mother says, I want a lake house. Yeah. Is that actually, because first of all, I wish that hadn't been another woman, because they should just want her to be on her own to be on her own. It shouldn't be about, you know, I mean,
because
I understand.
I want some more stuff.
Right.
And
that was like one of those things where I was like, oh, yuck. Mm-hmm. I wish they hadn't done that to that character, because it actually didn't even really make sense given the conversation they'd had at the dinner table. So that actually, I was like, eh.
Yeah, not
for me. But I have to say, I really do think this is a portrait of a generation at the economy. But every single generation has had this in one way or another. You know, my generation, it was, you know, I mean, apparently, if you graduated on time, I did not. It was apparently you got to, you know, then you there was a dot-com boom. So, you know, there were people who, like, suddenly had these, you know, but it has always been, Powell is correct about...
All things.
Yeah. But this thing of, you know, the internship, particularly in these artsy industries, be they books and magazine, if you want to be an actor, but these kind of where you actually have to come from money to start pursuing this. And there is no real legitimate meritocracy for these things. I mean, it may not even really be true for, I hate to say it, but it makes me think about NPR in a certain way.
Yes, it is.
And
it
gives me, you know, when I see one of my interns raise their hand and be like, well, the price of oil in 1970, I think, oh, yeah, you know, this is not actually a meritocracy, and you are very smart, and you have never left the library at Brown.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Sorry, well, I love Brown. Did someone go to Brown? I love Brown. Yay, Providence.
There was Living Single. That was mine.
Right. Oh, right. Right.
I'm not sure those ladies were affluent, but they were comfortable. And so it's still the same thing.
They always struck me as a little bit more established in their lives, like a little more settled
Except
in their lives
Sinclair.
Than these, right. But a little, but generally there was a little bit more of a vibe that those women kind of had it together a little, you know, much more than these girls do, because they're still pretty lost. All right, so that's Girls on HBO. I believe it's still it's as of this moment streaming on HBO.com,
which is interesting in and of itself. They are pushing.
They are really trying to get it to catch on, and I think they're hoping for lots of sampling and stuff like that. And it's interesting to see how they've kind of gone about doing that. They also premiered it at South by Southwest. They did like a cinema style premiere of I think a couple of episodes in Austin at South by Southwest at the film festival. So. Anyway, if you have thoughts about Girls on HBO or
you
any...
You have thoughts about Girls.
Of course. If you have thoughts about Girls, you know,
if
we're
here. If you
have
thoughts about this girl.
We're here. If you have thoughts about Tanya, Idris Elba, you know, call us. That's a very big thing with Tanya. We had to get in the mention. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or at the blog at npr.org/monkeyc. So we have a couple of people in the room who fit a category that sometimes we do not have as much of, and that is people who read a bunch of books. Right? Craziness. Woo! It's craziness.
A bunch of books.
Bunches of books.
That was my nickname, of books. That was not my nickname. I'm not going to tell you my nickname, but that was not it.
So we thought that this would be a good week to do a round of kind of like, what are you reading right now? So since she's a book editor, I'm going to start off with Powell Sagal. What are you reading these days, ma'am?
I have something awful to admit.
You're not reading
it. No, I am reading something, but it's very pompous. And so I encourage you. No, please. But it's okay. So it's
Hannah is visiting us.
The name's Glenn Weldon. Sorry, that's so mean, Glenn. I'm sorry. So my New Year's resolution was to read all the books that I've been telling people I've read over the years.
That's a good
because
resolution.
I'm awful. I lie indiscriminately, and I know enough about something to really do a very convincing impersonation of somebody who's read and loved Middlemarch.
We should have a total conversation about a book that neither of us have read, you know, and see if we could. That would be a hilarious.
That would be incredible.
Yeah, because we could probably teach a class on books we haven't read.
It started to be a little bit of a problem last year, and so this year I sat down, I made a list, and I started. You know, and I was like, okay, I'm going to start with Shakespeare. I'm going to read all of Shakespeare this year.
Good.
Isn't that
guy's good.
Look at this. Look at this immigrant can-do spirit.
Yeah.
I'm going to take on the Western canon.
Yeah, yeah. That Western canon in the face.
In the oppressor's language.
Yeah.
I am going to... It was so grand. And I think from January to April, I was just stunned by myself. I was just, this will be great. So it's April, and I own one very handsome copy of King Lear, and haven't read a thing. What I have been reading and I've been glutting myself on and feeling happy about it are, I don't know if anybody here likes, I think it's Gillian with a hard G, Gillian Flynn or Tana French.
And, I love both.
Right? So, I mean,
let's get married. Sorry, Glenn and Trey.
Barry proposes to people on this show all the time.
Are you serious?
Yeah, sure.
So this meant nothing.
Yeah. No. It means you're the latest.
She's never
so it means
proposed
everything.
To me.
It's very cheap.
So
very
it means something.
I got that.
I proposed to you.
Always the bridesmaid, never the bride.
I'm gonna
women just fight. This is why. We just tear each other
that's
down.
That's true. It's getting very,
the claws are out.
Getting
people.
Very catty in here.
I love both these.
That was a really good Trey.
Go ahead.
So long story short, I'm reading
Gillian Flynn,
Tana French. These are amazing. I guess you could call them genre writers. They're crime writers. They write about women behaving badly.
And name some books.
Okay, I'm reading Gone Girl is the new Gillian Flynn that's coming out in June, but you should read Sharp Objects, which is the nastiest, most intense murder mystery I've ever read. And it's just, they write fearsome, villainous women. Like, not since like Lady Macbeth, which I haven't read. Have I ever read such a book? You know, but so yeah, I'm getting in like a lot of guilty pleasure reading, which
I would not
fabulous.
Call Tana French guilty pleasure. I love Faithful Place. I think it
Faithful
is one
Place
of the best,
fantastic.
And I loved the second and the first one.
The
which
likeness,
I cannot even the likeness thing. What's the first one in the woods?
The first one that was my
I
least.
I kind of liked
you
it.
You liked it,
even
yeah.
just because I liked that it had a mystery
ending.
That was not solved.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
No, I think I would not call that guilty. But sorry, you didn't ask.
No.
I'm going to withhold judgment, as they say.
So you're into your crime fiction.
I'm in the thick of it. Yeah.
Anything else?
I'm also reading. I think this comes from Girls, actually. Can I take you on like a pointless foray?
Of course.
A pointless,
always.
Unrewarding
That's
foray.
That's our specialty.
I'm going to pack a bag.
All right. A better woman than I needs to write this essay because I really think there's something happening. There's Girls premiering.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Cindy Sherman retrospective happening mm-hmm. right now. And then there's a young artist named Lauren, how do I say her last name? Nakadate. And all three of these women, what they seem to specialize and love doing is they love photographing themselves in positions of that will make the viewer feel awkward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they love this and they love sort of portraying the female body in awkward, embarrassing poses.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why this is all happening at the same time, but I kind of went on this kick where I just got tired of it. I got a little tired of seeing females reduced to their bodies in this particular way, even though I like it and it makes me think about things. So my antidote to that is lavish amounts of Janet Malcolm, which I think a lot of people love. She's a New Yorker writer. She, again, writes about women behaving badly, which is strangely my particular obsession.
Do you want to behave badly, Pearl?
I do.
Okay.
I do. With you, Tanya, repeatedly.
Oh, okay. See, we're going to get married.
So she writes like cerebral sorts of... She writes about court cases. She writes about strange controversies in the lives of like Sylvia Plath and in psychoanalysis. And I think I was just hungering for women in control, actually, a little bit, and women restrained. And so I'm reading lots of her and enjoying it.
Excellent.
That's it.
Very, very good. All right, Barry Hardiman, I mean, you've been chomping at the bit.
I have been chomping.
Did I say chomping? I meant champing.
I chomp, too. I mean, I have a child that chomps. So I usually read in this sort of very stratified way, which now sounds snobby now that I say it, where I have one thing that's like a guilty pleasure thing, which I have on my Kindle so that I can fall asleep with my face on it, still reading on my iPhone. That's really, really... So I have usually... And then I have a middle thing. And then I have a children's book that I like to read. And right now, the book that I'm reading, the real book, is the second in the Wolf Hall trilogy. It's Hilary Mantel, Bring Up the Bodies. It's the good one because Anne Boleyn gets her head cut off. Spoiler alert! but it's real good. Enjoying that. My guilty pleasure on ye olde Kindle is I was sort of doing this... I actually don't even want to call this guilty, but I was doing this kind of synergy with the Anne Boleyn thing. I'm rereading The Other Boleyn Girl at the same time, Philippa Gregory.
Oh, nice.
I love historical fiction. I love the Tudors. I, you know, this is like a great period in history. But what I'm really loving right now is I went back and decided to reread. Did anybody read E. Nesbitt as a child? Five Children and It?
Mm-mm.
I really want to recommend these books. And so it's this group of Victorian children. Oh, my God. We sound so insufferable. I decided to read about this group of Victorian children and then read all of Shakespeare.
I set the bar really high.
I just want to beat myself up and take my lunch money. I don't even know what to do. So about a year ago, I reproduced. I have a child. So He's adorable, and I've been sort of going back to reread this, you know, fiction that I think he will enjoy as a young man. Or I hope he will. If he doesn't, he's out on his butt. Just like Lena Dunham. So anyway, the E. Nesbitt is so wonderful because it's such a great... She is so wonderful at writing the inner workings of children. Mm. And so what I've found is that I think it's maybe making me a better parent reading these. And these are... Anyway, I just want to... I meant to take this out earlier, but hang on. I have to read this one part. This is so nerdy. But it's so good, you guys. Because no one is going to go find this book. I understand this. And it's probably out of print. So listen to this. It is very wise to let children choose exactly what they like because they are very foolish and inexperienced, and sometimes they will choose a really instructive thing without meaning to. Mm. Now, having just watched Girls and thinking about, you know, watching my son grab at things and do, I thought, wow, everything in life is instructive. And so this literally, as I, you know, we watched the show and whatever, I thought everything is connected in this way of... How we behave is also instructive for our next behavior, which I just said very badly. But anyway, I really want to recommend this. This is E. Nesbitt, Five Children and It. It's actually a trilogy, also The Phoenix and the Carpet and The Story of the Amulet. It is so chock-filled with little gems like that that help you become a better human. And if you have a tiny human, maybe makes that tiny human a better human as well. And possibly, you know, love in the world. But at least I'm not reading all of Shakespeare. So sorry, everybody, God, for that digression.
Tanya Ballard Brown, what are you reading?
Well, I ain't reading no Shakespeare.
Oh, my God. Never again. Yeah, this neither. Is it. Never again.
Me neither.
Actually, I haven't been doing a lot of reading, but I have some books beside my bed that want to be read.
Right.
So I'll tell
That's
you
the
what
same
those
thing.
Are.
You bet. You bet. It is the same thing.
The two books, one actually today just won a Pulitzer Prize. It's been sitting there for a year now waiting for me to just open the just break the seal on the cover of this book. Is Manning Marable's autobiography, Malcolm X. Mm-hmm, I forgot the title, but yeah, Manning Marable. And I'm really dying to read that now, but, you know, since it's been awarded.
That's right.
Now that Pulitzer, now it's really great.
Now that it has a Pulitzer Prize.
At least you can say it was on your bedside table before.
Actually, the last, you know what else is sitting next to on my bedside table is, and I think Glenn will like this, is Derek Storm from Castle, which comes on tonight at 10. I love Nathan Fillion almost as much as I love Idris Elba. So I have that, but I don't want to quite break the seal on that because then it'll crease the edge, and I don't want to do that. So I've, every time I try to open it to read, I think about the creasing, and so then I can't do it. And it was hard to even take the plastic off of it. I mean, that took about a month.
So you've got the Castle book, and you've got the Manning Marable.
Right. But I have one more book.
You bet.
One more book. I love Walter Mosley. I've read everything that he has written. And I got his latest book somewhere around after Christmas, I think. And I even got two copies, a hardback and a paperback. And I'm sorry, Walter. I know that I said I was your greatest fan, but I haven't actually read this book. I did pass along the paperback to someone who has finished it. It's there.
It's the
I'm
thing.
Going to pick it up and read it. I am. I love Leonid McGill. I want to know what happens. I'm going to read that book. Mm-hmm. Oh, and today, my birthday's on Wednesday, so today we have cake and stuff, and I got a gift, and it is the unofficial Mad Men cookbook, so I think I'll be reading that.
Wow.
I think there might be some drinks and teenies and such.
And apparently pills now.
Yeah. I also have an unofficial Hunger Games cookbook and an unofficial Game of Thrones cookbook. So there's a big world of unofficial cookbooks out there.
You know what else I found on our giveaway thing? Someone may have taken it off my desk, is a graphic novel of The Kite Runner.
Interesting.
Yes.
Well, I have not seen
that. The Kite Runner in graphic novel form. I'm almost afraid. I read that book. Mm-hmm. I've been afraid to open this.
To look at what the graphic novel is.
Yeah. The graphic part.
Right.
Being, the operative.
So it's just been sitting there for a while.
That makes sense. Well, like Barry, I tend to have my e-books nearby. So I just finished, and this kind of goes under the frilly, fluffy kind of reading.
Bobbins.
I just finished Sophie Kinsella's latest book. She's the shopaholic lady. Mm-hmm. And, you know, frankly, I find all of her fiction irresponsible and lovely.
And delightful.
And delightful. Her latest is called either I've Got Your Number or You've Got My Number or something like that. It's got a great, cute little hook. It's about a woman who finds a
an abandoned cell phone, which, of course, turns out to be desperately needed by a very handsome dude. It's
always the, Tom Hanks and Meg right? Ryan are somehow involved.
If you pick up a phone, it's never like, this is some, like, mean jerk's phone. It's always like that it's some, you know, slightly... he's a brusque businessman. You know, he just needs
no
to...
No one has noticed
Mr. Darcy.
So
again,
it's always Mr. Darcy's phone.
Boy, you've discovered.
This is like the myth of our time is Mr. Darcy's phone.
Because that mean man can be converted.
Yeah, exactly. So I just got finished reading that. More cerebrally, I am also working my way through a bunch of Pauline Kael.
Lovely.
I do love reading good criticism. Mm-hmm. And I think I may have mentioned her before, but I just got a new big book of her stuff. Mm. And I was just reading her Blowout essay and a bunch of other very good stuff. So that's on the list. Plus, I now have an ice cream maker attachment for my my wonderful new mixer. So I also recently got a wonderful book about it, making ice cream. So
can I quote Pauline Kael briefly?
Oh yeah.
So in I think it was her review of Marilyn Monroe's first sort of breakout role, and she goes, and also introducing Marilyn Monroe, comma, a terrific wriggler. I just love that.
It's great
She's
writing.
She's as sharp as cervic. It's
great writing. It's great fun to read. But
that's true, because I bet that was for All About Eve, and all she does in that movie is wriggle. Yeah. That's all she
does.
Yeah.
She is superbly.
Superb wriggling.
So that's kind of what I've been reading. And that brings us to our final segment, which is, as always, what is making us happy this week. Barry Hardiman, what is making you happy this week?
This is really boring, guys. I'm sorry.
No.
It's Shakespeare boring? Or?
No. I mean, it's like, it's the same thing that I think is probably making everyone happy in the last couple of weeks, which is just, and we've been talking about it this whole time, which is just Sunday night television is so friggin' awesome. Mm-hmm. And I work weekends. Mm-hmm. So Sunday is my Friday. Mm-hmm. And coming home to Good Wife, which is just kicking butt, Matthew Perry. I mean, I'm loving it. Game of Thrones, it's, you know, fabulous. It might be a little tiny bit of unpleasant S&M sort of torture porn, but I still love it. And Mad Men, come on, girls. Mm-hmm. You know, Eastbound and Down is now gone, so they're going to fill it with something actually good, even though I used to like that. I just am loving my Sunday nights.
Does no one else like GCB?
Oh, I do. You know what? I've watched the pilot. I watched the pilot at work. Oops, not at work. I watched the pilot when work was over. And I was done with whatever was happening with the jobs report. I decided to give myself a break and watch a little GCB because I love Kristen Chenoweth.
I got to watch that show. I haven't been watching that show.
That was also my issue with Girls, because the bar is high for, you know, is this DVR
And I love
worthy?
Leslie Bibb. Mm-hmm. She's really, I mean,
right,
and
to get
Annie
onto
Potts,
the DVR on Sunday night. Nights is tough.
So Sunday nights is now like the gift that keeps on giving, because I have something Monday, Tuesday,
wonderful.
Wednesday. It's just, you know, so that's Sunday nights
are
making me happy.
Fantastic, Barry. Tanya Ballard Brown, what's making you happy this week?
This is the week of the birthday.
Wonderful.
The week of the birthday. We start on the 15th. We end whenever it ends. But the
you guys are
the
missing
birthday.
The gestures.
I know.
Which are so good.
I know. I feel like somehow unleavened bread is going to come into this. Like, this is the day upon which
I was able to telegraph a message to my coworkers who received it in exactly the way I wanted, so that I got a cake and some other prizes and gifts and such today.
By telegraph, do you mean sent an email? Because I've been trying that.
Yes. And they responded in exactly the way in which I intended them to do when I sent
that
message.
Well done, digital news.
I will not be at work on Wednesday, the actual day of the birthing. Well, I won't tell you how old I am, but it is the anniversary of my 21st birthday.
Right.
Maybe two or three times. But that is what I'm happy about.
Sounds like you're pulling off a perfect birthday week.
I was going to say, well done. Kudos.
Well done. Kudos indeed. Barbara Segal, what's making you happy this week?
What's making me happy is how many people are unhappy about there being no Pulitzer for Fiction.
Yes.
And I know it's like Twitter and people enjoy being indignant, but it's just also gratifying to see how many people care about novels and care that there isn't that Pulitzer Prize winning novel you need to go out and check, or at least if you're me, pretend to have read.
Yeah, so. That's right. That's the book that would have wound up on your to-do list for next year.
Mm-hmm. Have you gotten Marable. Really good at reading the inside flap? Because that's what I do. Like, I'm great at reading, at like getting every, I could write Everything, an essay yeah. just based on the inside flap.
Yeah,
I could write
you
a term
know what?
Paper.
It's starting to annoy me. They've started to just give you reviews back there. They don't tell you what these books
I know. So it's uh-huh. impossible to pretend you've read
them
it.
And
right.
I know. You have to start quoting reviews. And then you're like, oh, God, I sound like, you know,
right.
John
like, what
Branson.
Is the book actually about? Because I need to know that before I actually take the plunge. You need to sell
yeah.
this to me.
So you're just happy that people
care. So many
care,
people are unhappy. People no, and care. People care. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, of course.
Well, I will just say that what made me happy this week, I have a couple of very charming nephews. They are 13 and 10. And I made my way out to see one of them play 5 hours of baseball this weekend. And, you know, if you've ever seen a bunch of, like, 12, 13-year-old boys gut it out through 5 hours of baseball's doubleheader, you know, it's a pretty impressive feat. And they worked very hard. And then we went out and we had dinner at Generous George. Has anyone ever been to Generous George?
No.
Nobody sounds so...
Generous George is a restaurant where their specialty is they make these giant pasta dishes, which they serve on a pizza crust. So it's like you get your own big pizza crust, like the size of your plate.
Oh, my God.
And then it has like an 8-inch high pile of pasta on it. No one ever finishes it, ever. They basically bring you a take-home box at the end just because why would you eat all of it? So, of course, you know, I was with my sister and her family and their friends. There's a family that they have been, you know, friends with since all of the boys were little tiny boys. And so I kind of got to go out with this raucous group and have dinner at Generous George after watching my nephew's team, Go Knights, split their doubleheader against the other guys. So got there just in time to see my nephew drive in a couple runs. You know, he had a couple of big hits. He plays first base some of the time. He had a couple of nice grabs at first. So he played very well. Team played very well. And that was what was making me happy this week.
Yay.
Solid.
So that brings us to the end of our show. Now, you can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. Barry, give out your Twitter handle.
B. Hardyman, B-H-A-R-D-Y-M-O-N.
And we got to keep Barry tweeting, so follow Barry and send her lots of tweets. And Parul, what is your Twitter handle?
It's Parul_Segal. It's Parul_Seghgal.
Oh, and Parul is a great tweeter also. And then Miss Tanya Ballard-Brown, what is your Twitter handle?
I'm going to sound sexy like Parul.
Oh, God. I know. I could listen to Parul talk all day.
I know.
Especially
your voice.
In headphones.
Yeah. It's tough. Just,
it's so
stuff
pretty.
To compete with. Will you just call and wake me up in the morning?
I know.
I keep having people be like, I just want to tell you, like, I don't want to offend you or anything, but I really like your voice. I'm like, that's fine. I'm on the show.
But the
every
content
week.
Is a whole other story.
We're not
King Lear.
All right, TBB.
Okay, so I am at T as in Tanya. D-O-U-B-L-E-B as in Ballard.
So it's T-double-B. That is wonderful. And, of course, you can follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, who has gutted it out as the one man in the room through this entire taping. You can follow him at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in-and-out music. You are tapping your foot to it right now. Thank you all so much for coming to our wonderful women's edition of Pop Culture Happy Hour.
Woo, spirit fingers!
Spirit fingers.
Jazz hands,
spirit fingers. And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you back here with the normal crew to whom you are accustomed next week.